Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Before we get started, support for this podcast comes from Boost with Facebook, whose podcast, Boost My Business with David Fisher, features unique perspectives and insight from business leaders and small business owners. Hear stories and anecdotes about businesses just like yours. Gain insight on what it takes to grow a business and learn from both the mistakes and triumphs of others. Download Boost My Business wherever you get your podcasts. That's Boost My Business Podcast. Before we get started, support for this podcast comes from Boost with Facebook, whose podcast, Boost My Business with David Fisher, features unique perspectives and insight from business leaders and small business owners. Hear stories and anecdotes about businesses just like yours. Gain insight on what it takes to grow a business and learn from both the mistakes and triumphs of others. Download Boost My Business wherever you get your podcasts. That's Boost My Business Podcast.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome back to Chalk Talk. Taylor Davis, McKenna Kelly here to bring you all the latest news and updates from the world of gymnastics. Guys, it is March, which means the end is near for NCAA gymnastics. Postseason is right around the corner, which is crazy. So we are, of course, going to give you all the big updates from this past week in the NCAA and also touch on some elite topics, headlines that are happening in that world and make sure that we are giving you guys all of that. So it's going to be a great, well-rounded episode. And I'm just going to be completely transparent here. I want to give a special shout out to anyone attempting to do a podcast because this ain't easy. McKenna and I have technical issues almost every
week. Literally every time.
Literally just want to give a shout out to anyone who's over there fighting their computer and their microphone trying to do this. Like, we see you. We see you.
I love it. I freaking can't. Love it. Yes. God.
Technology is not always my friend, but you know Agreed. What? We're trying. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and jump into it, but got to ask McKenna for an update now that you have started your new role and you're coaching and in that side of things, which you've told me was something you did not anticipate
Yeah. Your
future would entail. But how's it been? How are you liking it so far?
I freaking love it. And if you would have asked me this my freshman year in college, like if you would have told me my freshman year in college, hey, in a couple years, you're going to be a coach, I would have looked at you like you had three heads.
Why?
I never would have seen myself in this position. Like I get frustrated easily, or at least I did. And I think it was just immaturity too, you know, and not having patience and not seeing, you know, that it's more than gymnastics. Like I'm not just there to coach a kid on to tell her to point her toes. Like you're there, you probably spend more time with the athletes than they do their own parents. So like you are teaching them a lot about themselves and about core values and about just how to carry themselves and their behavior and their response and how they treat others. And I guess with, you know, maturing myself and just getting older and realizing those things on my own, like it's so rewarding being a coach. And shout out to my coaches out there, like not personally my coaches, but all coaches out there, you guys, it's hard. It's hard because like I just touched on, it's more than just telling a kid to straighten her legs and point her toes. Like you are essentially teaching this kid how to grow up and be just to be a good human, because eventually gymnastics does end. And I think that has kind of helped me become a better coach as well, is like that chapter of my life is over. Yeah. I have little kids come up to me all the time. Do you still do gymnastics, or where do you go to school? And I'm like, I actually graduated. I haven't done gymnastics in almost a year. And they're like, what? Yeah. So, but I love it. I mean, those girls are my purpose. I wake up and I'm so motivated and so excited, and they make me want to be a better person. I think for a while there, you know, I think you can only motivate yourself so far in your life, and then it kind of becomes mundane and you kind of lose that spark. And I think I didn't realize that till I would start waking up in the morning and get excited to go see the kids and coach them and help them. And it's something so rewarding watching a kid, telling them a correction, watching them make the change, and visibly seeing the impact you're making. So I love it. Awesome. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I always think it's really cool to see kind of how athletes take that next step, because really, especially if you've committed your college years to a sport, you really are given a lot of opportunities to stay involved in some capacity. And we see it all the time. Former athletes go into the broadcasting or television side, and you know, you ended up doing this podcast. Now you're a coach, and you've done the flow gymnastics thing. Like, it's really cool to see the opportunities that kind of provide themselves. You just have to be willing to kind of be open to those things and walk down paths that maybe seem a little out of your comfort zone. Those 100%. Are usually the ones that actually work out best. So I'm excited for you. All right. Well, let's jump right on into some of these topics. We'll save NCAA for the end because that's a little bit more in depth, but some elite topics that I want to touch on. Big news happening this week. I think a lot of people have been anticipating the possibility of this happening, but the Jeslow Trophy is now canceled. The meet was supposed to take place in Italy in April and has now been canceled due to the rising threat of the coronavirus. This is just insane to me. I am one of those people, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I've been one of those people that like really hasn't been sweating the coronavirus. Like, I don't know. I've just been thinking of it as like some far off thing that is kind of being blown out of proportion by the media. And that is so naive and narrow minded of me. I'm well aware of that. But now that I'm seeing all these sporting events and different conferences and huge, huge international events being canceled because of this, I'm like, oh crap, like this is something that I should really take seriously. And I think it's because, like, I'm from the South and I'm like it privy to when there's a chance of snow and you go to the grocery store and all the bread and water is wiped out.
Yes.
And the next day there's like flurries. It's like sleet. You can't even consider it snow. Yes. And so like I've just been brought up on like things getting blown out of proportion, and it's really not accurate. And I guess like my naive self was viewing the coronavirus as this, and it's starting to become very real that this thing needs to be taken seriously. So I think this is a testament of that. Before the official cancellation, Team USA had already announced that they would not be sending their athletes to Italy. Instead, the athletes who were selected will be given a competitive opportunity at the National Team Training Center in Indianapolis, April 3rd through 5th. I assume they'll still do this just to give those athletes that qualified the opportunity to essentially compete, not just practice, even though it will be happening at the training center. But I just think this is crazy, you know?
I don't feel like that's going to be the same feeling for those girls either. And for any of them that, you know, that Jeslow was going to be their first international assignment, if that's the case, that's discouraging. Like, that sucks. But I do understand they want to be as precautionary as possible, especially with it being Olympic year. Like, that would be so devastating if something serious happened, considering we don't really have a cure yet. But I'm kind of on the same page with you as this, Taylor. First of all, I think you and I can both vouch for the South. I'd say we're extremely dramatic in any sort of capacity. We just like, I don't know, we're just dramatic. But I kind of felt like, I kind of felt like it was like a Zika virus, Ebola virus type thing where it was like a really big deal. And then we found a cure and like, then it was fine. I kind of feel like that's how it's going to be too. But I've been pretty naive about it too. And I've been like trying not to worry about it, but I do understand in terms of they're protecting the athletes or trying to at least. But from the athlete's perspective, like that's not going to have the same feeling. I mean, every time they go to national training camp, they do verifications, which you show your routine in front of kind of like the committee or whoever, you know, that group of authoritative deciders is for international assignments. They do that every time. So to them, it's going to be just pretty much another camp.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think better safe than sorry, especially oh, for sure. when you're considering like if these athletes' bodies are at all compromised, they could very easily hurt themselves doing their sport. So you have to be very, very cautious about what you're subjecting them to. So I thought it was smart, even if it was going to go on, that Team USA wasn't going to send their athletes. But I do agree with you. They're essentially being robbed of an experience that is good preparation for Tokyo. So that's interesting.
And for, you know, Tom Forrester and the rest of the people deciding who that Olympic team is to it, it's they need to see that. They need to see how these girls have been preparing, how the girls coming back from injuries, you know, are they up to par? It's a huge test, and elites don't compete enough as it is. They train so much and they do all the difficulty, but they don't compete near enough as much. So every competition matters. I mean, you have college where they're competing literally every weekend, and then elite competing 3, 4, 5 times a year at most. So every little competition matters, definitely. So I do feel like, this is, I don't know how this will play out in terms of deciding, honestly, what the Olympic team will look like.
I agree. But I certainly don't want to seem like I'm being insensitive. My thoughts and prayers are absolutely with anyone that's been affected by the coronavirus, the limitations that this has put on people traveling to see their family. 100%. Like I understand this is a very serious, dangerous thing. I don't want that to be misconstrued. But
and the athletes are more than their sport. We're not, I don't want to put that out there either that, you know, oh, well, it sucks that, you know, it's all about their, no, like it's about the people. It's about the girls. Like, gymnastics is going to end eventually. Their health matters. We're pointing that out, but this is a gymnastics podcast. So here
exactly.
Well, we promise.
Exactly. Well, they are getting an opportunity to see some of the Team USA members compete this weekend. The 2020 Gymnics International is happening. Actually, they are there now. I have seen pictures of the Welcome Team USA signs. 4 seniors and 4 juniors are in Montreal, Quebec to compete, including our girl, Michaela Skinner.
Yeah.
So that will be exciting to kind of see them in an environment like that. And I think, honestly, this news about Jeslo puts a little bit more emphasis on gymnics because there's not a looming, you know, international competition as soon as the one in Italy was supposed to be. So I think this brings a lot more eyes to Montreal.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's a good way to look at it. And I mean, especially for, I'm thinking of Michaela Skinner in this instance, like she's really trying to prove something. She's really trying to prove herself, her training, that she deserves and can, you know, be that spot on the Tokyo team. So I do think that this is a good way to look at it, especially, you know, in the situation at least Michaela's in.
Right. So are these international competitions leading up to the Olympics? Do you think that that's the primary goal? I mean, obviously you want to compete well, and if you, you know, walk away with the win, that's great. But this close to the Olympics, do you think that their mindset is more geared toward like viewing this as a tryout?
I think yes. Honestly, my answer would be yes.
You would have to, right?
You would have to, because I think it's more about just competing. At this point, every single girl on that team, every single girl on the national team is more than capable. They're really, really good. Like that is the best in the world right there, the girls you have on that team. But when you put them in an international setting, I think you have to consider more than just their gymnastics at that point. You have to consider how are they handling that time change? How are they handling international equipment? How are they handling their food? How are their bodies? I think those are the key factors they're really trying to hone in on, because at the end of the day, when you send those girls to Tokyo, they're not going the day before, the week before. They're up there for, I want to say, maybe more than a month. They have to get adjusted, especially over in Tokyo. I remember... I think if I remember correctly, when Sean and Nastia and the girls going to Beijing for the 2008 Olympics, they were up there for a hot minute. You have to get accustomed to so much more than just training. And actually, I was at, this is kind of random, but I just, for the listeners, I was at Flip Fest last summer with Sean, and I got to hear a really cool story that I didn't know. For those of you that don't know, Sean won the beam finals at Beijing, got the gold medal in beam. She had the flu. She was terribly, terribly sick that day. Crazy. Yeah. So she was in the back, like she had done like 10 routines, kept falling, which she really wanted to hit one before she went out. And like, I guess as soon as she dismounted in the back, they like called her name to go compete. And she went out there and she was saying like, I completely blacked out. I don't remember the routine. I just remember like dismounting and then I won. So what I'm saying is they have to get accustomed to a lot, whether they're sick or not. So I do think, yeah, of course they want to see how these girls perform, but I think it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. That makes sense. I think it's exciting. And if you've got kind of multiple motivators, I think that could sometimes get overwhelming. So I'm always curious kind of what their ultimate focus is when they're in a situation like that, especially since like the countdown is on. Like we are so close to Tokyo that I'm sure that is pretty much all-encompassing of their mental approach these meets.
And when you think of Lori Hernandez, that's one of the factors that she kind of has against the other girls who haven't been in a lot of high-level meets. She knows how to adjust to these things, and that's where she comes into play big time. So I think that is something that Lori has, is the experience in knowing how to kind of adjust to those little things.
Well, what's interesting about it is at what point does your past experience need to match up with where you are right now? Because Lori did not attend the February National Team Training Camp. And that is obviously like not a huge strike against her by any means, but you do kind of have to evaluate that and kind of weigh it out because these coaches are seeing these athletes in real time at the training camps, at the current meets and things like that. And you're relying on the knowledge of Lori from 4 years ago. So I think that's an interesting, you know, back and forth, but she kind of took this as what was going to be best for her. Also getting kind of a later start in the training, maybe push the schedule a little bit because she declined the invitation and is focusing her training on the second phase of the year from May to August. Tom Forster said the February camp is a selection for international meets in March and April, which Lori was not going to participate in. So I get that, and I understand her opting to not go that soon when those international meets weren't even on her radar. But it is interesting that we're going to be seeing her kind of in the 11th hour.
Yeah. Listen, because she's been there, done that, and come out on top, like, I trust her. And I trust that she knows what she needs and she knows what her body needs. And maybe she needs more numbers in a more comfortable setting. But at the same time, if you're Tom Forster, you're going to get more comfortable seeing the same girls coming to those camps. You're going to kind of build a trust in their gymnastics and the athlete themselves of, okay, this kid's showing up. This kid is continually hitting every time. And then if all of a sudden Lori comes in at that last phase, like she's planning on, it's like, you all of a sudden have to factor in, okay, fingers crossed, I hope she's been hitting the numbers just as consistently in the practices, you know, when all the other girls have been, like, it's kind of a 50-50, I feel like. It's kind of a catch-22 in the sense of, like, you trust Lori because she's already done it and she knows how this game is played, but she's older now. She's a woman. She's more of a woman, you know? She's grown into herself more. I do think that does help you more as an athlete. The older you get, you know your gymnastics a little bit better, but I don't know. It's really tricky. I trust Lori. I think she's got a good head on her shoulders. Obviously, she knows herself more than anyone. But at the same time, I feel like showing up, being with all the other girls, being in that competitive environment does affect maybe the selection. I'm not sure. Yeah. I would guess.
I think that's interesting. And it goes back to, I remember Olympic trials when Gabby Douglas made the team again. And there was a little bit of question associated with where she was in her gymnastics there. And they even spoke about it during the trials broadcast that there is such value in having someone who has been through that experience before, because yes, these international meets are amazing and these girls have handled high pressure situations, but there is absolutely nothing that can resemble the Olympics. Like that stage is the ultimate. And so if you have someone who's handled it and handled it well, you want them back. But I do think that there's risk associated with that. I mean, Gabby's, you know, second go at the Olympics was very different from her first. And there were enough pieces around her to where it didn't affect that much. But is that the case this year with Laurie? I just think those are interesting topics that obviously they're going to have to make decisions around. But I also think she knows there are so many eyes on her. Mm-hmm. Honestly, there's eyes on all of these athletes as they vie for Tokyo, but she knows there's some extra on her and the expectations are high. And if she does anything wrong, a misstep, and doesn't look solid, the first thing everyone's going to say is she doesn't have it anymore.
Right.
She's lost it. Yep. She can't do it. So I understand being there until she knows she's 100% ready.
That's a good point. I didn't think of it like that. That kind of makes me think when Shawn Johnson tried to make her come back, I remember her. She really wanted to make the point that, hey guys, I'm not the same athlete you saw when I was 16 years old. Like I'm 19 year old woman now. Like I know who I am. I know my gymnastics better. I mean, obviously her comeback probably didn't play out the way she had envisioned it. But I really like that she tried to emphasize on, hey, I'm not the same athlete. And maybe that is why Lori is trying to play it a little bit safe. I think that's a really good point, especially the way social media has grown over the years.
Like exactly.
More than just the gymnastics community is watching her, and people who have no idea what they're talking about feel like they can chime in and say their two cents, which of course anyone can say what they want. That's our right. But it doesn't mean it's not hurtful, and it doesn't mean it's going to affect her.
Exactly. I think you have to be cautious on that and make sure you're putting yourself out there at the right time, because you're already on a bit of a platform. So I understand her decision in that. And then lastly, for the elite side, we want to absolutely make sure we shout out, first of all, anyone that listeners or gymnasts, anyone that was affected by the horrible tornado in Nashville. Like my heart goes out to you guys. My thoughts, prayers are with you. That was awful. The devastation that is across Tennessee is just so heartbreaking, and we are absolutely in your corner. I did want to shout out Magnitude 10 Gymnastics, which is obviously a gymnastics facility that was completely demolished. I mean, the photos are
awful. I just got chills.
It's completely done. So there is a wonderful GoFundMe set up to help Magnitude 10 Gymnastics rebuild. And I wanted to make sure that our listeners knew about that. So you can go on GoFundMe.com and search Magnitude 10 Gymnastics. Their goal is $50,000. And as of like an hour ago when I checked, they were at $29,416.
Wow.
So they're definitely gaining some steam, which I think is awesome. But want to make sure that we put that out there. And even if you can donate a dollar, like every little bit helps.
Yeah. I'll find that link, guys, and I'll put it on my Instagram. I'll put it in my Instagram bio and my Instagram story. But if you're listening to this and my story is past, you can find it in my bio.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and dive into the NCAA. Like I said, now that it's March, it feels like I'm stealing this from basketball, March Madness, you know, because everyone knows what's looming. It's almost time for conference championships. You know, regionals will be decided soon. The NQS is officially in play. So there's a lot more analysis in road scores and home scores and who you rest and who you give an opportunity to before postseason. There's a lot. It's kind of like chess is happening right now. Up until now, it's been checkers. And now you're playing chess a little bit.
That's
so
funny.
Want to go through some different ones real quick. We'll start with the big dog. No surprise here. Oklahoma defeats Denver with a 198-45 to 197. Now, we did talk last week in full expectation that we would not see Maggie Nichols for a while, and she competed in the freaking all-around.
Oh my gosh. The gym internet was like freaking out. They were saying like classic KJ, like we're not surprised, but we are surprised. Wow. Well, welcome back, Maggie. You came back strong.
I mean, no surprise. No. I also think that's a testament to the potential that they see in Denver. I really, mm-hmm. Maggie is not someone who needs the reps.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
And she was a little shaken up last week. Obviously the injury wasn't incredibly severe if she could compete in the all around this week, but if you can give her a rest, you do. And I think if they were competing against a school that they knew they were beating by 5 points, then I think they would have rested her.
That's a
but
good point.
I think that this showed the potential that they see in Denver, that one had a bit of a question mark with it.
Yeah, No, that's a really good point. I think a good perspective to have in terms of Denver and how they perform. They are such a strong team. I mean, we saw them for the first time at the national championship last year, and Oklahoma saw them.
Denver's 197 that they got in this meet, they now have three away scores at or above 197 for the NQS, which honestly takes a little bit of pressure off. Like for we mentioned last week, the NQS now determines rankings. It will determine postseason seeding, and three of the scores have to be road scores. And that hopefully negates the home judging bias that we often see. Only three of the scores taken into your average can be at home. So this gives Denver a really good spot. Obviously, they would have liked to have been closer in this one to Oklahoma, but getting a 197 to solidify that you have three, and honestly, they could beat that. Like, it may not be that that's what ultimately gets put in, but I think that does take a little bit of pressure off for your road meets, that you know you're already sitting at a really good spot for your NQS. They did drop one spot, but they still remain above some powerhouses like Alabama, in large part because of their road scores. So I think that's certainly something they can hang their hat on.
Yeah, and something to remember is the whole format, the super regional format of, you know, this is a multiple day competition. And again, I think it's really, really important. I think it's really great because we have seen major upsets, i.e. last year. You also see how Florida has come back, you know, and how their fight this season has been through the roof. I'm so excited to see how they do the rest of postseason. But that leaves so much room for upsets. I'm really excited to see you know, how these regionals draw out, you know, which seed is where and where these girls compete. It's always kind of fun to like go to a different conference and compete. I know 1 year LSU, we went to Nebraska and that was really fun. That was an electric environment, also something to point out. But so I'm excited for super regionals right around the corner. I think it's a great setup for, you know, the couple of days of the national championship competition. And something important to remember is that everyone is facing these days of competition. You know, like you think of OU, oh yeah, of course they're going to be really good. Yeah, but like their bodies are hurting too. Everyone at the point in the season is hurting. Everyone has to compete for 2 or 3 days. So something to consider. It's very like equal in those terms. Agreed. I feel like.
Also want to give a shout out to Maddie Carr. She won 3 event titles, which gives her 102 in her career. And that is now the Denver program record.
So, I'm not surprised.
Very exciting for her. Not surprised at all. And certainly well-deserved. Well, you mentioned Florida a little bit. So obviously we'll touch on them. They defeated Georgia 197-8 to 196-5. Their scores have been huge this year.
Huge.
It sucks because it's like kind of overshadowed because Oklahoma's always getting 198s, which I'm not even going to touch on because I think sometimes that's ridiculous. But agreed. Florida scores are absolutely insane, and I think they're putting up absolutely huge skills right now. And Trinity Thomas earned a 39.825 to overtake Kyla Ross in the top spot in national all-around rankings. I think those two are going to go head-to-head for the all-around title.
I cannot wait for that. That will be so fun
stellar.
To watch. Oh my gosh. Yep. Also something to note that the Florida-Georgia meet, I feel like it's so much more fun because of the whole Alyssa-Rachel situation. For those of you who don't
know. The Bauman sisters.
First of all, I want to point out, I on the last episode said Alyssa Bauman was a senior and she's a junior, and my world is completely shook because you guys, this entire time, I thought she was a senior. Like, I feel like she's older than me, so I feel like she's a senior. I did not realize that she's that much younger than me. Someone on the gymternet on Twitter corrected me, and I want to thank you for that because I had to take a second. I was not okay. I really, really thought she was a senior this whole time. But that gets me excited.
She carries herself
like a senior
with such maturity.
Yes, she's such a leader. She's always been so tenacious and fierce. And I genuinely thought just by how she carries herself, I didn't feel like I had to look into it. I just assumed, oh, she's definitely a senior. She acts like one. So my bad. Thank you guys for correcting me on that. But anyway, the sister rivalry, I think that is so fun. Coming from a family of four sisters, and we all did gymnastics at one point. I can't imagine how fun that would have been to compete against your sister in a huge conference like the SEC.
For sure. So. What's interesting about this one, some people forget, last year Georgia upset Florida, and that was like a shock of the season. Yeah. So this kind of begins, well, not begins, they started it really this season. Florida is on like a redemptive kick. Yeah. Everything that they have been doing this season seems like redemption from the way last season ended. So I think that was interesting that they put up quite the score in Stegman Coliseum, which is not an easy place to compete. You know,
no, it is not. And, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, how is Florida handling regionals coming up? Are they going to put too much pressure on themselves? Are they going to take it easy? Like, right. I would imagine that they are reminding themselves of that feeling from last year, and they never want to feel that again. They never want to feel that defeated, oh my gosh, that feeling of shock. We did not make it to the national championship. A team who not only makes it, but wins. I think lucky for them, they do only have one freshman, as Jenny Rowland mentioned on the podcast when we had her on here. I think that's easy for them to make her, I don't know, I feel like that's easier for her to kind of embrace the environment. When you have such a big incoming freshman class, they take up so much of the team, and that's so many more girls to like get used to and understand the culture of things. And when you have one versus the rest of the team who knows that defeated feeling, I think it's much easier for her to kind of get on board with that and just do her part. It's like kind of one personality to tame, one, you know, mindset to tame. And so I do think they have that on their side going into regionals. But I am interested to see how they handle themselves and handle the pressure of, you know, wanting to qualify.
I agree. I think that could be an interesting mental warfare that they kind of have to deal with, just to kind of revisit that. I'm sure Jenny will try and keep them all focused on this year. Do not think about last year.
Right.
Utah defeated Washington. This one was actually incredibly close. 197-675 to 197-6.
Wow.
But with that, Utah clinched the Pac-12 regular season title, and they have a chance to finish the season undefeated in Pac-12 action with a win at Stanford next weekend. Honestly, I really like this Utah team, and I feel like they're gaining steam. Honestly, I feel like several teams right now are gaining momentum. I'll go ahead and bring in Michigan, because I also wanted to talk about them. They're sitting at number 7 right now, and they got a huge 197-9 this past weekend. And I really think we're going to see this Michigan team at nationals. Sometimes the ones that fly a little under the radar are the dangerous ones come postseason, as long as they can handle the pressure once they get there. And this group seems as strong mentally as they are physically.
I think so too. And Utah is always a competitive team. They're always, I think, a very polished team. They have beautiful gymnastics. Yeah. I think they're fun to watch. I feel like they kind of just do them, you know, that they are very Utah. And I love that. I think that's what makes them unique. That's what makes them fun to watch. But dude, with that upset over UCLA, oh man, I'm sure that sent their confidence through the roof. And I'm sure that, you know, kind of reminded them of who they are as a team and what their goals are this year. And I definitely think they'll be able to capture that win over Stanford.
You also got to keep in mind, they went through a lot of change heading into this season. Now they had co-head coaches now with Megan Marston and Tom Farden. Now it's just Tom Farden. They lost Michaela Skinner, who was just like a generational athlete. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like they really skipped a beat. I think they started the season a little slower. A few episodes back, I touched on the fact that I was unsure how they were handling all of it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm starting to think it was actually intentional, that their season kind of did slowly build. And I think you had to know your team really well and know what approach to the season is best. Give me your thoughts on Michigan. I think that this team is so interesting because of how they've kind of quietly been rising, and that kind of sets you up well for postseason.
Well, they've got some key players on that team. Natalie, if I'm saying her last name right, Wojcik, she is phenomenal. Her gymnastics is beautiful, but also dynamic. I think she is a huge player for that Michigan team. They also have a freshman, Sierra Brooks, I believe, and she is amazing too. So they've got some superstars on their team. The rest of their team is very consistent. They're doing their job, and I think they're peaking at the right time. We saw a couple years ago, I believe this was my junior year maybe, that Michigan came out of the gate so strong, like huge, great scores, and then they did not make it to the national championship. So I think they're trying to gear themselves in the right direction. I think they are peaking at the right time. You know, we can only hope that these scores are confidence boosters for them, that they're accurate in terms of, you know, how the judges are perceiving their gymnastics and scoring them properly, that it'll end up right for them because they are a great team. And I feel like they're just fighters. I feel like they're always just in to fight and they're good sports about it. So I really am a big fan of the Michigan team, and I really do hope to see them because they're always fun to watch and they're very competitive and they're, like I said, they're fighters.
Well, it'll be interesting to see this week because they compete at Oklahoma.
Wow.
So I think that's going to be a really interesting opportunity for them to show what they can do. Unfortunately, you kind of head into that meet with expectation that Oklahoma is going to get the bigger score. Yeah. And that sucks. That has to suck.
I don't even know. Like, I thought about this as a coach. What do you tell your team that goes into a meet like competing against Oklahoma? Like, hey guys, like we probably won't win. So just do your, like, I genuinely am curious as a coach, what do you say to your team? I mean, I would imagine it's like, hey, focus on you. Like, let's focus on our performance. Let's do the best we can. Right. Let's make improvements here. But I don't know what kind of take you have on that. It's like, I guess just do you, you know, use this as a practice meet. Like, I don't know. I mean, and on the flip side, like how does a team like Oklahoma go in and they're like, okay, guys, this is going to be another win for us. Like, and they don't let down either. That's the thing is like, we haven't seen that get to them in the sense of like, they've been taking it too easy or they take advantage of the fact that, yeah, we're good enough to just not care. Like we haven't seen that. So this will be a good matchup. I'm excited to see it considering the scores Michigan's coming off of.
I think your approach as a coach would probably be different for Michigan if this was a home meet. Mm-hmm. But going to Oklahoma, you know that the cards are kind of stacked against you. So I think your approach is a little bit different. If this was at Michigan, I would actually be like super intrigued and on the edge of my seat for it. But I think going into Oklahoma, you're behind the eight ball.
That's a good
point.
But
it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, but that's a really good point.
And certainly could be a great opportunity for Michigan to get a great road score for their NQS. So certainly still has a lot of value. But here's my thing. While we've talked all season about how we're getting more of a distribution of talent across the country and there are programs that are on the rise, the Denvers, Nebraskas, Minnesota, we're still not to the point that they're testing the big dogs. And I think that's when actual parity will exist. Like, yes, these up-and-comers are getting bigger skills and better scores and cleaner execution, but you know that they're not going to upset anyone in, like, the top three. Mm-hmm. So I think until that happens, we're still in this place of redundancy. Like, parity is going to show up in the postseason. Yeah. That's when we're going to see some interesting scores and you're testing the best of the best. But once again, I feel like this season, like we know who it's going to come down to. And I'm really looking forward to a time when everyone is kind of in the mix all season and more upsets are happening. But that's all dependent on judging bias. We know that.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Once again, this week, McKenna is going to give us a bit of a score deduction breakdown like you guys have asked for. Last week, she did vault. This week, she's going to touch on bars. And once again, I don't have a clue what to add. So you go ahead, girl.
Okay, you guys. So I actually have the rules pulled up in front of me because if you followed me at all in my gymnastics career, I did not do bars in college for a very good reason. I was not very good at them. And we had a really good bar lineup, so it just wasn't worth my time. If any college gymnasts are out there, you understand where I'm coming from. It's just like, if you're like ninth string, it's like, you can do other events. Let's focus there. So I'm going to read the special requirements for bars, you know, in terms of what makes up a priority team, what their requirements are, how they build up to that 10-0 start value. And then we'll talk a little bit more about what the judges are looking for in terms of, you know, deductions, what they tick off, what they're looking for. So point A reads a minimum of 2 bar changes. So in terms of, you know, the judges, you can't stay on the low bar and you can't stay on the high bar the entire routine. You got to change flight direction, which leads into point 2. You need 2 flight elements, a minimum of 2 different Cs or a D and B, not to include dismount. So if you see a gymnast do a chapoche, that would be a flight change. You are leaving the low bar to go to the high bar. Normally at a chapoche, you will see an overshoot or a pack. That would be another flight change. Those are high-level skills. You're looking at some Cs right there. In terms of a dismount, you want to have a pretty difficult dismount that sets up your start value a little bit more. Also something to point out, as I'm reading these rules, it does say, and I think it's kind of funny that it continually specifies in all of the rules that, like, this is different than JO, this is different than level 10, like what you would see in level 10. So I thought that was kind of interesting in terms of, you know, if you have a freshman coming in as a level, obviously they're a level 10, they have to maybe change up their bio routine from what they had. Maybe that flew in level 10, but you needed to add something in college, or maybe you could take something out. So I thought that was something cool to note. If you followed a gymnast in her JO career and her bio routine is now different, that may be why. Okay. One element with a longitudinal access turn, minimum of C, not to include mount or dismount. And then it says here, note the JO compositional deduction of insufficient change of direction does not apply to the NCAA. So what, sorry, that was like super wordy. And part of my brain is like fried reading that, a lot of big words there. But what they're saying in level 10, you have to have a change of direction. So at some point in the routine, you have to have a front grip. So if you see a gymnast doing a Jaeger, that is a front grip direction. If you see a gymnast in level 10 doing a blind full, she starts in a handstand, she pirouettes, changes her hands around facing forward and then back to the front. That is considered a change of direction because she's changed her direction. In college, the rules are saying that this does not apply. So you do not have to have a change of direction, which I think is really great, because if I'm thinking of a gymnast like myself, I could not go forward at all. If you asked me to do a front giant, I would peel through the bottom, land on my face, and scorpion, like that funny vine of the girl doing the fool in the grass, and she lands on her face. That would have been me. So yep. I think it's important to note that you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old athletes. And at this point in their career, it's about perfection, right? We're not trying to add new skills. We're not trying to change anything so severely to where it kind of messes them up. So I do appreciate that the rules are kind of playing along with the age of the gymnast and knowing, hey, she's probably not going to learn too many more skills. If anything, we're trying to clean things up. So in college, you do not have to see a change of direction, which I think is really good. Oh my gosh, that voice crack. Sorry, guys. You, the coaching in me, man, I just am a super passionate person. And so I've been not like yelling, but I definitely have been like super excited all week. So I sound like super raspy.
Get it.
And then C dismount. You have to have a C dismount. You can't have like an easy full or like a double back. You can have a blindfold, a double back. A double back is a C dismount, because you can go blindfold, a double back, and that'll give you a connection bonus. But you do have to have a C or higher dismount. So that's why we see a lot of double layouts. That's why we see a lot of, twisting dismounts. Difficulty in dismounts is just kind of like a flair thing. I think it looks good. And normally in your lineup, you're going to see the harder dismounts more towards the end. In terms of deductions, obviously handstands, guys. Handstands are super, super important. There's a range that you have to hit. They'll give you, I'm trying to picture like what they do on the SEC network in terms of like that little like freeze frame where they show the gymnast in the handstand and they show the protractor.
Let me just go ahead and throw this out there, a little tidbit. Yeah. When the SEC network first debuted the protractor, do you know how many complaints we got?
What?
No one, the gymnasts and coaches were not happy, because before that, I think you could. What Kathy Johnson Clark always says is you can finesse a handstand on top of bars. Like your shoulders may not be directly under you, but if you kind of like pull your feet, it looks like it's right on top of the bar. But this thing shows even the slightest bit of error. And literally we got so much pushback for airing that. But now it's so important, because I think it's a teaching element. And ultimately everyone got on board. But when it was first debuted, they weren't exactly happy about it.
Well, that's interesting, because I feel like it's not like the judges get slow-mo and get to go back and watch that. I mean, at least I've never seen that happen. So I think it's good. I think it's good for people who are trying to become gymnastics fans or don't know too much. They need to see, oh, that's why she didn't get that, or that's why she got the deduction. I think that's super important for the viewers. You have to hit a handstand. If you don't hit a handstand, it'll be anywhere from half a tenth to a full tenth. Obviously you want to stick the landing. How they are releasing from the bar on their dismount, if their head is through the back and their shoulders are closed, that will be a deduction. If feet come apart on a flight change element, like a pack or an overshoot, that's also a deduction. Any shape change that's not supposed to happen, a deduction anywhere from probably a full tenth, I'll say. Also on big release skills, so major releases, this is where you are on the high bar and you are doing a, think of it as like a flip over the bar and you re-catch it, or you're flipping and re-catching the bar. That is considered a major release. Commonly in college gymnastics, you're going to see Gingers, you're going to see Tkachevs, and you're going to see Jaegers. So Jaeger is from the front grip direction, and you will see a gymnast, she will either have it in a pike position or a straddled position. In the elite world, we've been seeing layouts, which is absolutely insane. Sunisa Lee, especially, she's crazy. We also see commonly the Tkachev, also a straddle. That's mostly the common one. Sometimes you'll see a pike. And again, in the elite world, you'll see a light out, also Sunisa Lee. Nuts. But you could also add different turning elements going into those releases. So a Jaeger, you may see a toe handstand. So picture a handstand. You pike, your feet are on the bar, you're spinning around the bar, and then you open back up to handstand, and you can go into blind into your Jaeger. So you'll hit that handstand, you'll turn your hands, and you'll go into your Jaeger. Or you'll do a clear hip into a Tkachev, or you'll do a toe hand into a Tkachev, which is also known as a Ray. And the clear up would be a Hindorf. So there's so many different combinations. College, I feel like it's a little bit more simplified, but overall, major deductions you're going to be looking for is shape change, form, handstands, and stuck dismounts. Anywhere ranging between half a tenth to a tenth to two tenths if the dismount is like a huge jump or a huge step or one or two steps. So I feel like that was a big word vomit. And again, I learned a lot. I keep touching on this because I just want you guys to understand, like, as a gymnast, you kind of just do your job. And you kind of learn along the way without having to sit down and like study the rule book. For me, this is learning. If I have misquoted or said something incorrectly, like, these words were really annoying to read. And Jim Renette, do your thing. Correct me. I appreciate and I understand the criticism. So but that's what I have for bars.
Love it. Love it. We're doing our part, people. We're not perfect, but we're freaking trying. All right, everybody. Well, that does it for us on this episode of Chalk Talk. No guests this week. We had quite a few topics that we wanted to dive into, and we didn't want to cut it short, but we will be back to having guests in the weeks to come, so no one panic. We've got plenty that we want to bring to you. So thank you so much for listening to us each and every week. Be sure to subscribe, leave a friendly comment or constructive criticism. We love that too. McKenna and I are trying to make this thing bigger and better as season continues and Tokyo gets closer and closer. So you don't want to miss it. We so appreciate all of you listening and following along. We will talk next week.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! Our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.